Welcome back to Running for Beginners, the podcast that helps you make sense of the miles, the mindset, and everything in between. Today, we're exploring a side of running that doesn't get talked about enough, mental health. My guest today is Sepeda Saremi, a licensed therapist and the creator of Run, Walk, Talk, a counseling approach that takes therapy outside of the office and onto the trail. We'll talk about why movement can help people open up, who this style of therapy is for, and what the research says about walking and emotional regulation, and how runners can think about their daily miles as more than just fitness. If you've ever said, "I do my best thinking on walk," this episode is going to click for you. So let's get into it.
Well, good morning, Sepeda. How are you?
So I already did my intro, which obviously you're not going to be able to hear until later. So I gave a little bit about a background. But I'd like to hear from you on how you created or evolved your therapy practice into Run, Walk, Talk. You give it a little short synopsis for people.
Yeah, it happened in layers. So the idea came to me when I was a patient. So I was somebody else's therapy patient, and it was in my mid-20s. I was gearing up to go to grad school. I was struggling with some depression, anxiety, a little bit of PTSD, and I went to therapy, and coincidentally, I started running at the same time, not with my therapist, but separately. I had never been a runner before, so I discovered running, got really into it, got really into exercise. And I remember thinking, therapy is really great, but running is amazing. I wish I could do them at the same time. And so that kind of planted the seed for me. Then when I went to grad school, I have my master's in social welfare from UCLA. We do a research methods class as graduate students, and you kind of design a hypothetical study. And because I was so into movement, I looked at the impact of running on mental health and saw that there was so much evidence that it's really, really helpful for mental health. And in social work programs, there's a big emphasis on something called evidence-based practice. So doing things that you know that the research shows work. And I could see all this evidence, but I didn't see the practice. Like, nobody was actually doing this. And so that's when I was pretty determined, like, I think I got to do this. I think this is going to be what I do. And it just slowly evolved. I started walking with patients when I worked in community mental health. I wasn't allowed to run by my agency. And then when I went into private practice, I started running with people. And primarily now I do more walking than running. I haven't had a runner in a while.
Sure.
But running is part of my practice. So if somebody comes in and they want to run, that is something that I can do with them. But that's kind of how it all started.
So do your clients know that that's what they're getting into when they connect with you? Or is it something you offer up after the fact?
Most of them are self-referred, and they're coming because they want to be outside and because they want to have the ability to walk in and or run. And for the clients that are local, I do other kinds of work too. But yeah, for clients that come to see me for therapy, they know what they're getting into and they're excited about it.
Yeah, of course. I would be too. So for someone picturing like a couch in an office, what happens differently in a run, walk, talk session?
We are not on a couch. I don't even have an office anymore. So we meet at the beach. I'm in Southern California. So we meet at one of our beautiful beaches, and we are moving the entire session. So you usually do an out and back, and you're in the open air next to the ocean. There's an option to be walking on the sand. We're running on the sand if you want to. And then there's a pedestrian path. So it just looks like that. And it's beautiful.
Outside.
Yeah, you're just outside. Yeah. So that's the way that my practice works, because that's the environment that I have. In the last couple of years, I've been training other clinicians. We have a certification program in Run, Walk, Talk, and everybody uses whatever is available to them. So some clinicians we actually have quite a few clinicians in colder climates. And so in the winters, some of them have treadmills in their offices that they use, but primarily the practice is designed to take advantage of the outdoors.
Okay. So why does moving side by side make it easier for many people to open up, to speak to a therapist, to, you know, open their problems up?
Some of it is just the relaxation that you get from moving, period. So there's a phenomenon that happens called self-generated optic flow. So when you're moving your body through space, moving forward through space, as you're watching the scenery change in front of you, it's very relaxing. It makes your amygdala, the sort of part of your brain that tends to get fired up when you're anxious, it kind of quiets it down. And so you're naturally more relaxed when you're moving. And then when you're side by side with someone, especially with a therapist, you don't have this sustained eye gaze. Like right now, you and I, we're looking at each other on a screen, but we can see each other's eyes and see each other's facial expressions. And if you were my therapist, I might be thinking, what's Mike thinking about me? How does he feel about me? If I'm talking about something that is maybe difficult or shameful for me, that's going to be harder if I'm scanning your face for judgment, right? But when I don't have those inputs, it's a lot easier for me to just focus on the story that I'm telling and what it means to me. And so I'm naturally going to be more relaxed and more open.
Nice. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So are there particular issues or personalities that benefit more or less from this type of therapy?
So the research around movement for mental health shows that it's pretty effective for anxiety, depression, PTSD. I've used it with all different kinds of clients, patients over the years, with all different kinds of issues, all different kinds of personalities. And I would say, like, whoever wants to do it, it can benefit them. So I don't see...
So marriage counseling therapy, that kind of stuff, anger issues, all those kinds of other things that you talked about, they would still benefit from it if they wanted
to. Anything that you can do seated, you can generally do when you're doing a run, walk, talk session. There are some sort of rule outs. So if somebody is unsafe, right, they're not, they're maybe actively suicidal, and there's the their suicidal ideation or the thoughts that they're having about suicide include, you know, I'm a one path that's on the edge of a cliff. So if I have somebody that has ideas about jumping off a cliff, like that's probably not the path that I would choose with them. So we do want to be really thoughtful about what's going on with someone when they come in to see us. And then there have been instances in which I've had clients who are maybe involved in the legal system. They have engaged in maybe like violent crimes. And so just for my own safety, I might not take them out somewhere that is secluded. So we do think about sort of safety issues, but if you're purely thinking about, can this help most mental health issues? My answer is yes. That's what I believe.
Terrific. I believe it too. That's why I'm talking to you, because I firmly believe that there is some kind of connection and benefit. And this is just from the layman to movement and mental health, running and therapy, however you want to put it together. And that's why I think it's going to be like a three different interviews, and you're the first, your first one. I just think there's got to be a connection. And speaking to you now, it kind of proves my point that there is a positive thing involved for this.
For sure. Yeah.
So is there research that helps us, gives us information about like movement, nervous system regulation, being outdoors during therapy? Is there anything that on the clinical side of that, the research side?
Yeah, there's tons of research to support. So there's a whole field of psychotherapy called ecotherapy, so doing therapy in nature. And in ecotherapy, one of the ways in which we believe that it's useful is this idea of soft fascination. It kind of resets your ability to focus and pay attention. Like right now, you and I are in front of screens, right? And there's a certain level of intensity and focus that's happening that's very taxing for people. That's why if you've had a long day of Zoom calls, for instance, at the end, you're just cooked, right? You're just done. Mm-hmm. You can be in nature all day and not feel that way. Your brain won't be tired that way because it's effortless to pay attention to nature. So that's one way in which it's helpful. There's research that shows that being in green space is really great for your mental health. You're much more able to regulate quickly. So, you know, get to a state that's maybe calm, relaxed more quickly. And then if you have access to water, so being around a lake, the ocean, a river, that's even better. So I always say green is great and blue is even better. We also have lots of research around nervous system regulation being supported by movement, being supported by exercise. And in fact, there's a lot of research coming out in recent years around how it can be for a lot of people who have like moderate depression, using exercise as a first line can be even better than antidepressants. So we have a lot of supporting evidence and just getting more and more every day, which is excellent.
Yeah, it's great. If you've seen any of my running or lifting posts, you know that I talk about these Roan Honey Packs. They're part of my everyday kit, no matter the workout. Roan was created to fuel moments of deep focus and peak performance. With nature's best ingredients, their honey helps you escape the noise and get in the zone. Roan Nutrition's supercharged honey packets is nature's energy in your pocket. Their raw honey-based fuel gives a clean, natural boost of energy. Rhone Supercharged Honey allows for easy digestion, has all-natural ingredients, provides sustainable energy, and comes in delicious flavors. And there's also caffeine-free versions. Rhone Supercharged Honey is powered by four real ingredients to fuel your flow, each with a purpose. Raw honey for energy, pink Himalayan salt for hydration, caffeine from green tea for clean focus, and lion's mane mushroom for mental clarity. Check them out at rhonenutrition.com. That's Rhone, spelled R-O-N-E. And for a limited time, if you use the code RUNWITHMIKE at checkout, you'll get 20% off your purchase. Just remember to use the code RUNWITHMIKE. So, and I thought about this earlier when you were talking about your giving a previous answer, and the question still makes a little sense. So how do you handle privacy and confidentiality when you're outside? Now, I understand if it's just you and your client on a cliff or edge of a cliff, it might not be a lot of people. But if you're walking a path or a biking path or a hiking path, there could be a lot of other people. Is there just gaps in the conversation until someone passes by? Or, I mean, how do you guys deal with that?
Yeah, there can be. So I always say that there is no confidentiality in an outdoor session unless I, you know, own the land or something, which I don't. Sure. I don't own tons of land. I'm not doing this in a private place. I make that really clear to my patients that I cannot guarantee confidentiality. In fact, we're going to assume that we don't have privacy. And then we're very thoughtful about when we schedule sessions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I have a session with somebody on a Tuesday at 10 a.m., in like October, we're probably not going to run into that many people. If I have the same patient on a Saturday in June in the middle of the day at the beach, that's a mess, right? So as a clinician, I'm thoughtful about how I manage that with the client. We try to get as much privacy as we possibly can. And in advance of going out, we talk about all of the different things that can happen. We can run into somebody that they know. How do they want to handle that? What are things that they're comfortable talking about where somebody could overhear them? And what are things that they're not comfortable talking about? And so we manage all of that way in advance of ever going out so that they feel safe and comfortable in a run, walk, talk session.
Yeah, I can see running into somebody and having to explain or introduce who you are to them and how uncomfortable that may or may not be depending on the situation.
Yeah. So the deal I make with people is let's keep on moving. You just wave at them. You say hi and keep moving. And what's really nice is that it's socially acceptable. But maybe the only socially acceptable time is when you're exercising is to keep doing your movement.
To ignore them and just move on.
That's exactly right. So most people are not going to stop your run to say hi to you and have a prolonged conversation or not going to stop your walk to have you do that.
Great. Yeah. So can someone get like similar mental benefits from walking with a friend, or is the therapy piece essential?
You can get,
and I know there's probably levels of this, but.
Absolutely. There are levels of that. Yeah. So thanks for mentioning that, because I think it does depend. You can absolutely get the mental health benefits of being outside, even by yourself. You can get those benefits if you're walking outside or running outside. And with a friend, you get the benefit of the social contact, social connection, which is really important for mental health. When you're working with a therapist, it's very different from being with a friend. You usually have a particular goal that you're working on. They're a trained professional. They bring a certain level of objectivity, or at least distance from the problem, so they can see it from a different vantage point than a friend might be able to see it. And you're typically going a bit deeper. There are lots of ways to heal and grow, and a lot of those involve our friends. We need friends and we need social connections. But when you're doing a therapy session, it's very different. And so they're not really comparable. You're going to get a lot from a run group or a running partner, and you can go really deep with someone like that, but you're not getting psychotherapy because they're not necessarily a trained therapist working with you in that role. So it does look different.
Okay. So you brought up a good point that I'm familiar with on the other side is group therapy. Do you do, or does your practice do group sessions outside? Or
in my practice, I don't, but some of my trainees do. And so that's really exciting. Okay. And we've looked at that research, and it's part of the training is looking at that research of what are the best ways to structure groups and run them, and what do people need and what do they benefit from. One of the really cool things about starting One Mock Talk has been the community that's been built up around it of clinicians who are doing lots of different kinds of work. So I don't see kids, but there are definitely lots of clinicians who see kids. Right. I don't do groups, but there are other clinicians who do groups. So I'm learning from a lot of them too. And there are big benefits to doing groups.
I can imagine if there's a group format in an office, you're speaking to one client while the other seven are just kind of waiting their turn. Whereas if you put that whole group outside, at least everyone's getting outside, getting the benefit of being out in the outdoors and the serenity and what you're looking at. And then you can still jump through those, you know, seven people's questions or whatever.
Yeah. And oftentimes clinicians will manage that by having seated or kind of still parts of the group. So in the beginning of the group, they'll kind of do a check-in and kind of meditation or some sort of exercise to get grounded and get people connected to their bodies. And then at the end of the group, they might like sit in a circle and kind of talk about what it was like and what they talked about. The other benefit is you end up in a group context where people are running, people will naturally pair off. And so mm-hmm. they end up connecting more deeply with each other that way. So it can be really great.
I gotcha. Yeah. So what misconceptions do other clinicians or clients sometimes have about your model?
So the biggest question I get from people, and I often get this from people who are not runners, is how can you run and talk at the same time? And so, and I think this is a very American question because we're such a performance-oriented culture. And we kind of expect if you're going to do something, you're going to do it the hardest way possible. But the running that's happening in a running therapy session is always conversation pace. It's always easy pace. So whatever pace it is that the clinician and the client can both easily have a conversation, that's what we do. And that's pretty easy for most people. Yeah. The other is that you have to run every session or the whole session. And that's not true either. It's not uncommon for me to have clients that never run. They just want to walk, and that's just fine. I always joke that walk is our middle name. So it's totally fine if you want to come and you just want to walk. The whole point is body awareness and then learning how to use your body to help you feel better.
I gotcha. Hey, everybody. I've recently added another staple to my running kit, these UCAN energy gels. I started using them during the Austin Marathon, and I fell in love. So now they're always one of three things I take on my runs, and you should add them to your running kit as well. With UCAN gels, you get advanced glucose control, which is the foundation of energy and performance. You'll have no energy crashes because there's no sugar, which means there's no spikes, which means a steady fuel supply. You'll also have more fat utilization, which enhances your body's ability to burn fat or fuel. And you won't have gut issues because of their unique digestive advantage, even at high carb doses. UCAN has patented a supercarb technology called Live Steady. It's an extended-release supercarb backed by over a dozen clinical trials, has a unique ability to deliver high amounts of energy while keeping glucose levels steady, helping prevent crashes. One of the coolest things about UCAN was that it was created to save a life. Jonah, a boy with glycogen storage disease, needed to prevent life-threatening blood sugar drops. His parents and scientists developed Live Steady, which fuels athletes with steady energy through the power of glucose control. And for a limited time, if you use the code RUNNINGFORBEGINNERS when checking out at ucan.co, you'll get 20% off your purchase. Just use the code RUNNINGFORBEGINNERS. And it's kind of a follow-on. So when you created your model, are these things that you have to explain to people that are getting certified, like the certification process and how they need to, not attack, but how do they need to resolve certain questions and issues like that?
Yeah, totally. A lot of the training right now is, we just finished our fourth cohort and I've kind of played with different forms of training clinicians. I'm learning like what the best way is. And we're going to move into a different model in the spring. But what we do is we organize the information kind of in three different layers. So we talk about movement as method, which is like all of the brass tacks of like what a session would look like and how you set it up and how you make sure that you're safe and that your client is safe. And everything that like you and I can observe if we're watching two people running together. That's movement as method. And then we have movement as modulator, where we talk about the nervous system and physiology and how does breathing work and how can we take advantage of like these very beautifully designed intricate systems of our bodies to, how can we leverage the body to help the client achieve their goals. And then the third piece is movement as metaphor, which is where we talk about what movement means to people and how people are expressing themselves through movement, even in ways that they might not be consciously aware of. And that's where we get kind of really deep into the therapy stuff. So the program is like pretty robustly built out at this point, because I've been doing it we started our first training in like January 2023. So I've had like a lot of experience now with what kinds of questions come up. And oftentimes the things that hold people back are like the confidentiality piece or worries about safety or liability. And then we resolve those really in the first session of training. And then we can go deep and like really have fun with, okay, well, if we've got a framework that's safe and ethical, now what can we actually do? How can we actually use and leverage this movement to get people achieving their goals? It's really cool.
That's awesome. So it's another rabbit hole follow on. Are there issues within state by state for doing this kind of work? Because if someone listened to this podcast and said, man, I really would love to switch over to a therapist that does this or something like that in my area, in Missouri, for example, is it something that it's accepted, you know, statewide, 50 statewide, or are there only certain states that, you know, their regulatory agencies that monitor you guys allow only certain states?
As far as I know, it should not be a problem in any of the 50 states. We have clinicians now. They all operate independently. So people get certified and they operate independently. And then I provide, there's like ongoing consultation and support that they can get if they choose to continue participating. We have people in more than 20 states now who are Run Walk Talk certified. We just got our first one in Missouri, actually. So, yeah, it's really fun. Most of the ethics boards in each state, they specify that you need to get training in the thing that you're trying to do and be thoughtful about how you're doing it and consider client safety and all of those things. I make sure are covered in the certification that I provide for people, because it is really important. We don't want people to get hurt physically or psychologically doing this work, but a lot of the states are pretty similar in how they set things up.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good to know for people.
Yeah.
So for someone like me, like a runner or any other runner who already uses miles to process their stress, which I do a lot, how would formal therapy amplify that?
So if you're doing a run, walk, talk session with a therapist or trained, a certified practitioner, you are having a more focused conversation than you might with your running partner. Your therapist is going to be holding on to kind of the thread of what it is that you're trying to achieve. So there's not as much like, you know, when you're with a running partner, oftentimes the conversation will meander. They're taking as much space as you are. And it's very different in a run, walk, talk session. You're the focus. Your life is the focus. And you get to go really deep with a guide, a very well-trained guide. So it looks really different. What's funny is a lot of my clients who have been very serious athletes, like they're training for a tri or they're training for a marathon, sometimes they'll choose to walk in our sessions rather than run because they're already getting their miles in a more structured way, right? So they've got particular goals, like they're doing like tempo runs or interval runs or whatever. And so their training is already really focused. So sometimes having more miles in a running therapy session is not helpful for them. So ironically, sometimes when people are training for races, they do the lower intensity with me.
Get your conversational pace distances in that way.
You can do it that way too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
really careful to delineate, like, this is not a workout. Like, this is not workout. Like, you shouldn't be relying on your run, walk, talk session for your workout. It's different.
Right. It's just movement.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice. So if someone's curious, what's the best way for them to explore Run, Walk, Talk or find a train provider?
We have a website. It's runwalktalk.com. And there's information there about how it all works. And then on the website, there's a page called Find a Practitioner. And there's a list of, and I think at this point we have 40-ish people on that list around the country and around the world. We have one in Australia and a couple in Switzerland too, which is exciting. gone global. And so you can go to that site. We also have an Instagram, which I'm not very good about updating, but when cohorts open up, I will announce it on the Instagram. And that is at Run Walk Talk.
Okay. So covered pretty much everything I wanted to talk about, but I didn't want to leave without asking you, is there something else you want to pass on to listeners about your therapy methods or in general, Run, Walk, Talk, to let people know before we go? I don't want to miss an opportunity for something.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Just that I think it's I hope that they'll share this with people. My goal is to get as many people trained as possible in this method so that any client who wants to run and walk on a session can find a practitioner who can provide that for them. That's the ultimate vision of Run Walk Talk, to get it around the world. And something that I'm very passionate about too is this idea of kind of like being curious about why you're moving, and going deeper than just like, oh, I want to be physically fit or I like how it makes me feel. Sometimes we're always telling stories to ourselves, and sometimes we're telling that story with our bodies. And so being curious about what story am I telling myself, or what story am I reinforcing with the way I train, with the way I approach my movement, with the way I'm actually moving, that can be really cool. So I encourage people to do that.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Is there any, I forgot one last question, because I always ask this. Is there a question that I didn't ask that you wish I would have, or I should have asked you?
Oh, I think you're very thorough. Very good interview. Yeah, I don't think so. I think we're going to talk about bilateral movement a little bit, but I think we pretty much covered it.
You sure?
Yeah. I think where, you know, the way that I have been working, we have a lot of research around the mental health benefits of movement, and we have a lot of research mm-hmm. around the mental health benefits of psychotherapy. We don't have as much research, and I hope to change this. This is a kind of longer term goal. We don't have as much research around the mental health benefits of moving while doing therapy. And that's starting to change. Like in the last couple of years, there are now studies that are being done where people are getting therapy while they're walking, right? Not as much on
that's
running.
That's kind of what I meant to get to in that other question about how it amplifies, because mm-hmm. both of them together are great. Mm-hmm. Or both of them individually are great, but together that must amplify it. It just must. There's got to be, yeah. Someone's going to do the research and figure out that it is.
I think there's like they're starting to do some of that research, and they're seeing like a little bit of a benefit. There's more adherence, I think, for certain populations. And again, it's always going to depend population to population. It's going to be really, really different. We meet every month. The Run Walk Talk practitioners meet every month, and we talk about research. And last month, we talked about a study that was done in, I believe, Australia with men. Men have a hard time going to therapy. Western men often will do almost anything before they go into therapy. They'll do almost anything else. And so having ways of doing therapy that feel more casual and more sort of appealing to them is important. So this study did that with them, and it did find a little bit of a boost. People are more likely to go back. And so I think the primary benefit of combining the movement with the therapy is, one, you are much more relaxed. It becomes more casual. You have less of a power dynamic between you and the therapist. You can kind of focus on yourself a little bit more, and you're less worried about how the therapist feels about you, and you want to come back because it feels good. And a lot of times therapy is really hard, right? You're going in and you're talking about things that are horrible a lot of the time, mm-hmm. right? Things, maybe traumas that have happened to you, or why you feel low, or things that are making you really anxious in the world. Those are pleasant things to talk about. And so I think as clinicians, whenever we have a way to make the frame of the work more appealing, more safe, and even joyful, why wouldn't we do that? And that's where Run Walk Talk comes in. That's what it's about.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. What a pleasure.
I appreciate your time.
It was all my pleasure. Thank you.
Huge thank to Sepetu Seremi for joining us and for the work she's doing to rethink how therapy can look and feel. I think a lot of runners, especially new runners, already know that movement helps clear the mind. Today, we learned there's real intention and training behind why walking side by side can make it easier to talk, process, and heal. If this episode connected with you, or if you know someone who says, running is my therapy, share it with them. it might open the door to a whole new level of support. You can learn more about what SEPTA and the Run, Walk, Talk method at runwalktalk.com. And as always, keep moving, keep learning, and remember, every step forward counts, so let's run forward together. We'll see you next time on Running for Beginners. I hope you hit the like button, follow the podcast, and share with your social media contacts. You never know who in your circle has wanted to run, but for whatever reason was too shy or fearful to undertake the challenge. I hope to point out the inclusiveness of running and give information that is accessible and relatable from a relatively new runner's perspective. Don't forget, you're responsible for your own health. Please talk to your doctor if necessary before starting any new physical activity. And nothing said on this podcast by myself or the guests should be construed as medical advice. Any products advertised on the show and purchased using the code RUNWITHMIKE will earn me a commission. This podcast was created, written, produced, edited by myself, Mike Fleming. Show music is Everyday to Play by Ethos.